Susie, you have that. I mean, it seems like you're in an area where there's probably more continuity, though the cultures.
No, I don't think so at all. I mean, if I think about Monstrous and I think about the Women's Therapy Centre, Women's Therapy Centre was a radical intervention into psychoanalysis in Britain, and I think it made psychoanalysis and psychotherapy available to women cross class, cross ethnic group, cross madnesses, if you like, and it was self-referred, and you could come and. But it faced its own internal problems around when Louise and I left, around the tyranny of non-leadership, and the notion of a collective which wasn't led, and where people went to then was to conventional psychoanalysis. In other words, all the kind of theoretical leaps that I think we had made, and they were not insignificant. And I do think that what feminism brought to psychoanalysis was completely transformative, but it did not transform psychoanalysis in this country. It did in the States, actually. So you had all these people who were interested in feminism and psychoanalysis, and then all of a sudden they got interested in psychoanalysis as the answer rather than being as a way of approaching the issues of the reproduction of femininity and the difficulties. So actually it's a very disappointing field to live in, and I've been extra institutionalized ever since then. And I was thinking when you were talking about the fact that the producers, the women producers, yet they're not the directors, and it seems so bloody obvious that of course we can produce, because that is the reproduction of women's skills at a professional level, being paid to be, you know, operators at that level. But to dare still to take up our space and to make a space that's particularly defined and to make that risk and to have that level of authority on your shoulders and to feel okay about it, well, that's where we weren't sufficiently enabled, because we still are guests in institutions. We're not yet principals in terms of having changed the culture of institutions. Mm. Okay, so we've got the women in there, but we knew we needed a critical mass in order to change the value system, so that the kind of thing that where women became men, which is everything that we all fought against, and yet which, you know, Alison Steadman writes so funnily about and so tragically, is precisely what we were against. And yet we, you know, so I think this, we're right on the cusp of, can we have the argument again? Can we use what we understand?
Because even if the content, even if one is able to produce a bit of content which looks okay, the structure is so completely not changed. Mm. So we talked about this. It's like I work particularly in a hierarchical structure. I behave like a hierarchical person because that's what my job is. And we haven't changed the structures. And we all know, those of us who are involved in structuralist arguments for years, how that nothing will really change unless you change structures. And of course, you can't change structures until you change people. So, you know, you end up with, you know, bosses, male bosses who will still perceive us as ball breakers because we're strong women doing a good job, rather than fantastic, we've changed. And I think the structural argument is really present.
There's also other kinds of structures, like the kind of context and spaces in which theatre happens or film happens, and the audiences. I mean, all of those questions were asked, but now it seems like those agendas have been lost as well, in terms of taking theatre to a different kind of audience, charging different ticket prices, all of that stuff completely off anyone's agenda, it seems.
Well, it's as if the price...
You don't agree?
The price that women pay for being given access to those jobs is to shut up about women's... What women might want to say as women, so you can we'll give you the job of, you know, distributing the money for this and whatever production company, but you have to play by the existing rules, which are the men's rules, and if you try to introduce something else, you'll be a troublemaker and the job will be given to someone else.
Jane, sorry, were you wanted to disagree, which would be good to have some... thinking, this is getting a bit... Oh, God, we are getting so negative. But, I mean, are there ways in which we're... those agendas are remaining?
I think, I think some of them. I mean, there's still lots of, alternative theatre companies doing work. I mean, not necessarily... and lots of women in them, not necessarily with an overt feminist agenda. But I just think what you just said, that all of those issues to do with different pricing, I mean, people still do concessions.
I just think a lot of that's kind of been toned down a bit. A lot of the concessions you see nowadays is kind of, you know, £2 off the kind of top price or whatever, and it's not not as radical as it was. Michelle.
Well, I mean, I think that it's interesting, the argument of being enablers. I mean, Beryl and the Pearls became a collective away from a director-driven theatre group, and that was something I was very happy to hand over. And yet what we're talking about is, in the real world, they're sort of power brokers. And actually, I think what was great about the 70s and 80s is we all kick-started our own careers, and then we got quite interested in our own careers, and we didn't chat anymore. I think that I was particularly taken by Beban Kidron's website. Having directed Bridget Jones, she'd obviously mainstreamed herself from the film she directed as a student on Greenham Common. And yet she said she was finding it difficult to get funding on her website, this is, for projects that she really wanted to do. And to me, looking back, as Sue has pursued me to do through my scrapbooks, what I think was, it was the chat, really, that we had when we came together. And we suddenly said, well, actually, you know, together, rather than in our separate careers, we can sort of make things happen, like we've made this evening happen out of really nothing. Mm-hmm. And I think that sort of chat is really, was the energising factor in the 70s and 80s, coming together. Mm-hmm. It came out of consciousness-raising groups. It came out of just talking. And I think that in order to do the kind of creative things that we want to do in whatever field, because that was also the energy in the 70s and 80s, it wasn't just theatre, it was whatever field, it's quite good to encourage each other again. And I do feel in my 50s that, you know, the images aren't really me anymore. And that, you know, I'm expected to have a long career now, because pension's a bit problem. But I think it is also, and I suspect that there is a trend towards this, that it was an exciting time, the 70s and 80s. And I sense, certainly in education, we have the light touch Ofsted now. You can get away with a lot, and you couldn't before. And there seems to be a slight drift towards something that's slightly less measuring. Mm.
Can I just ask a question, though? Because, as you said, we are all older women, and I'm just wondering what younger women's agendas are, because I think we have to be slightly careful that for us these are still issues. I work with young women, and one thing has been very clear, they do not have the work ethic that we all had. They have a much healthier... Sorry?
They have to work much harder.
Well, they probably do. Well, I don't know that women I've spoken to and worked with, you know, they have a much healthier life-work balance. They will not do the hours that, you know, I'm sure we've all done over years for no money. Mm. I mean, they have a much healthier life-work balance, and I think that's something to think about. Where, in a way, this is still very much our agenda, and I don't know if anybody is closer to younger women in this field, what their agenda is.
And there are some younger women here tonight, maybe not.
You would like to
many.
Speak. Yes.
But, I mean, because I was going to say, this is obviously kind of moved on to the kind of larger cultural agenda very, very clearly out of our own experiences. So I do want to open it up to the floor. I do want to make sure, though, first, I wanted to ask Cindy Oswin just quickly, because this is also an evening about documentation and about recording histories, to just say something quickly about her project. So I want to make sure that's registered. Cindy, you... Because it kind of links in with one of the project of documentation, which I've sort of tried to start tonight.
Thank you. Yes, for the last couple of years, I've been interviewing my contemporaries from the 60s, actually, involved in... involved in making theatre out of the 60s from around 1968 up to the 80s, which, as part of theatre history, seems to have fallen into some kind of black hole. So I've been gathering the anecdotal evidence from lots of people, my contemporaries, before it's too late, and I've got some 30 hours of history, and if anyone here would like to contribute, please give me their email. And I'm also doing a show about it, which opens at the British Library on October the 16th. So that's
particularly experimental theatre.
Yes.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Okay, but I'd like to sort of throw it open. Lily Susan Todd isn't here, is she? I've not seen her. She was going to talk briefly about remembering Buzz Goodbody, which obviously also links in, but I've not seen her. Anyway, so who would like to speak from or ask a question from the floor? Have we got any responses to all the above? Anna, can you say who you are? It'd be useful.
It's great. I love. It's great to have a mic, actually. I've got four really short points. Can you hear? Oh, okay. My name's Anna Birch, and I set up Sensible Footwear in the 80s, and now I've got a new company called Fragments and Monuments. I want to just take two four short points, actually, and they will be short, but I wanted to address Susie's point, because Sensible Footwear was set up in response to Spare Tyre. And I was a member of Spare Tyre consciousness-raising groups. And I have to say that relationship between theatre and the body and workshopping, I think is still a very clear thread to my work now. And I mentioned Carty Fine, who is the writer of Wollstonecraft Live, our large-scale multimedia show on Wollstonecraft, which is out in production at the moment, just about the influence that you had, but also the fact that we're working in that area and we're just finding it really difficult to get our work taken up. And I think there's a lot of work in the area that you've mentioned, Susie, around representation, women and performance. And as a director, I think that mentoring schemes for young women directors are hugely important. And I won't go into detail about the kind of initiatives that are taking place at the moment, but there are. And I think there's a resurgence in those sorts of initiatives. I think the new audience thing, certainly Fragments Monuments, taking that very seriously, and work in a global and local perspective. I think the issues around engaging with the mainstream are interesting, and as somebody who's postdoctoral and had a history in higher education, because as a single parent went into university teaching as a kind of way to get a sustainable income, probably the risk of sounding too kind of personal at this point, or I can't think of what the word is when you do your therapy, but confiding in you at this point, that route hasn't actually provided sustainable income. And I think that's interesting as a female director. And I think that, I can't remember who it was from the panel, and I should remember, but I think it might have been Susie or back again, about defining a space and authority. Maybe it was Gillian. Yeah. It's around that issue of defining a space and taking authority in the outside that I think is, and perhaps it was Cheryl as well, that is around the role of the women artist, and those issues are still very pertinent.
The woman with the dark top on there. Yeah.
Hi, yeah, I wanted to respond to something that Cheryl said. Oh, my name's Rebecca Morden, and I'm from Scary Little Girls Theatre Company. And I collect rabbits, seemingly. And I wanted to ask Gillian a question as well. It wasn't a bad response at all, Cheryl. I was really interested in your question about, I'm not actually sure I count as younger now, because I'm going to be 30 this year, but I feel young, so I'm guessing that's kind of in there.
It's all relative.
It's all relative, exactly. And my, yes, exactly, so that's fine. I started a theatre company, this theatre company, about 3 or 4 years ago. We've done two full-scale sort of fringe productions that were paid. We've had no Arts Council funding for that, but we've paid people. No one's worked for free for us, artists or technically. And this is the first year now that I've been able to draw a wage from the company, albeit, well, there is more one. So the work ethic is definitely out there. I'm not the only artist I know doing that by any stretch. And the other thing is, I mean, I just think that we're totally interested in the same issues, because, you know, I feel quite unoriginal sitting here listening to what you guys have been saying, because I'm an elected member of CND Council. You know, I do direct actions. I'm a co-founder of the London Feminist Network, we reinstigated the Reclaim the Night marches in London. And our plays, our manifesto on our website is all about reclaiming women's stories and putting them culturally into theatrical spaces so that women exist again. We're working with academics on Irish history to do exactly that, and their priority is doing that for women. So I think, and that might just be me being a freak of nature, except that I recently advertised for a director with the Young Vic website, and we were inundated because people looked at our website and said, oh, there is people out there who want to do women's stories and are interested in that, in those absences, and recognise those have a part to play structurally in women's lives completely, and storytelling's key in that. So I think that I don't think I'm alone in saying that these things are completely relevant. Yeah. And that it's really exciting, and that kind of leads on to my question with Gillian, sorry to be going on a bit, I'll stop now, which is just that I don't want to reinvent the wheel, and I don't want to leave women who come after me to be doing this work over and over. And I'm so interested, I'm obsessed with structure, and I'm so interested in you saying structurally we haven't left, and I'm sure you're actually doing yourself down, I'm sure there's obviously an enormous legacy that you've left, and lots of reasons why perhaps more structure that you wanted wasn't in place when you moved on. But what would you say now that you could do different that I should do so that women after me do this better? Thank you.
There's no answer to that. I mean, nobody told us what to do. We just, you know, you just get a. It's about passion. That's the bedrock. If you don't, I mean, clearly you do feel passionate about it. Thank God, and that's where you start from. And really, there are no rules. You know, it's not like I can say to you, oh, there's a theatre in Sloane Square, and when Ian Rickson leaves, you can apply, you know, you can take over that. It ain't going to happen. See, we're still dodging and diving, and we're still creating whatever little spaces we can, and I think that's all you can do. But it requires, you know, double the amount of energy, double the amount of commitment, but just do it.
Can I just ask, come back on that, because, Gillian, we do know a little bit about structures, and we also do, I think, that we had guilt about ambition in those days that might have been seen as a personal ambition, right? I mean, which I don't think the next generation had, because if we weren't all moving together exactly at the same rate, there was a version of feminist foot-binding going on. It was very unconscious, it was very complex. And I think there is something different now.
I think if we'd had Jude Kelly here, she would be saying to you, storm the citadels. Mm. And she did it, and did it hugely successfully. She ran a major regional repertoire theatre. The person who's taken over Newcastle Playhouse is... Erica is a fantastic young woman who's... and I think...
For Erica Wyman.
Yeah. Yeah. And I actually think we're going to see that more and more. And I think you guys have got to have that ambition, and you've got to absolutely go for it and take over, the citadels of culture.
I think you've got to be
and
tougher
I
than
hope
you were.
I'm here when we see a woman theatre director of the National Theatre, which I think we will. And you should be it. You know, it should. So, and I do think you're right. I think we were constrained by.
Right, and so there's an awful lot I do actually think that we've understood that we could, if we were having a serious workshop, as opposed to a toe in history. Sure. There's an awful lot that I think there is that could be shared and could be learnt. And I hope we can do that.
Well, I want to ask that question in it. Turn this as the last question, really, where we go from here. But there's a woman there behind Rebecca who'd like to speak.
Hi, I'm Emma Bernard. I used to be a Scarlet Harlot, but now I'm over 40. And what I wanted to say was about power and campaigning, I suppose. I directed a group of girls recently doing a show about suffragettes, girls from 6 to about 15. and had to explain to them the concept that there used to be a time when men were thought to be more important than women, to which they went, oh, don't be ridiculous. Don't be ridiculous. And I think there's something, there is a kind of trough which comes after a campaign, and it's about people feeling powerful and empowered and possibly getting complacent in whatever way. And as mothers, parents, mother as I am now, I feel that I have ridden quite happily on a wave of what was a campaign, which became power, and that we need to go back to campaigning. Maybe not campaigning for exactly the same things we were campaigning for then, but campaigning, being a campaigning spirit and challenging the status quo. I think some of the problem is that we've all turned into consumers, actually, in this country anyway, and that's something that needs to be challenged. Consumers of the education system, consumers of clothes, consumers of food, consumers of wealth, whatever. Mm-hmm. We have shifted as people and have to go back and challenge that as women. And that's a kind of example to our daughters, I suppose. That's what I'm trying to say. They feel quite powerful, but maybe they need to get a bit more aggressive, possibly.
Right. Julia, did you want to say something to Julia Pascal in front and then Frances Rifkin? Julia's right down here at the front. I'm just filling in the gap. I mean, I think that one issue is, I mean, I was very excited to hear about this theatre company, Scary Little Girls, but I think, you know, the lack of a press which is actually responding to these things, it's kind of that old hat, we're not going to reflect that kind of work anymore because we did that. That was all in kind of, you know, 70s, 80s, and it's been and gone. I think that's a real issue. I mean, there's you know, in those days there were at least Spare Rib, there was Time Out City Limits. Time Out would write about this kind of work. I don't know if they're here tonight. You know, I think there's a lot of stuff which is kind of being erased and not noticed by the media, and that really is a challenge. Continues to be. Julia.
Yes, I'm Julia Pascal. I'd like to pick up on that. I think that's a very important point. I'm a theatre director and playwright, and I was an actor at the National Theatre in the 70s when there were women's meetings going on, and I can tell you the comments from the men around those meetings were pretty scary because the men were terrified. In the 1980s, someone made an allusion to the Conference of Women Theatre Directors and Administrators. That was a very, very important and interesting period, and those conferences were incredibly important. And I don't know if they were ever noted or archived. There was a point, and this is to go back to the point of ambition and my favourite topic, which is the politics of the whole story. There was a point when we discussed quotas. Should there be quotas of women in the funded theatre? And it was at the time when there were debates about the private theatre. Why don't we just hire a private theatre and get Lady Diana, as she was, to fund us? So what we hit was the right and the left wing of feminism. So were we Tory feminists or were we socialist feminists? I was a socialist feminist, and we brought up the whole discussion of should we then go to the Arts Council and demand from them that they give representation of women? And we took a vote on it. And the vote went against. And I voted that we should. And there was only one company, it was Clean Break, that voted that we should. And I think that was the bridge. I think that was the point when the whole thing fell apart. Because had we taken political action, had we gone to the purse strings, it's an old Marxist argument, we wouldn't be sitting here today. We would be running those theatres. We would be writing those plays. And I think there was tremendous fear amongst us to take space, as Susie was talking about, to challenge the boys. There were some people who thought, if I don't make a fuss, I'll be the one woman who's let in, because the boys in power were getting frightened because this was going on. But we had no collective action. When Kim Evans took her job at the Arts Council, I went to see her and I talked about this. And she said, are there lots of you? And I said, no. She said, there's just you? I said, well, there's lots of us, but we're fragmented. Had I had this room behind me, we wouldn't be sitting here talking about this. So what I'm saying is, it's wonderful that we're having this now. It's great that we're here. I don't think it's a question of generation. I think the same problems are still there. There's a few token women, but not much. There's a panic when the issue comes up and a few women are thrown together to do something and then it goes away again. But if we can act collectively, we can still go to the Arts Council while it exists. We can still go to the purse strings. The problem about ethnic minorities, they've been successful because they've been shouting. We've been frightened to do anything, and I think that's our problem, and I think we can still get around it. And we women in our 50s, we've still got lots to say and lots to do and to pass on to the next generation, but hell, we've got a lot to give now.
Thank you.
Frances Rifkin.
Thank you very much, Cheryl.
I've worked in political theatre for my whole career. In the 70s, I was doing anti-fascist theatre. There was a massive anti-fascist movement in a company called Recreation Ground. In the 80s, I was working with the labour movement in a company called Banner Theatre in Birmingham, which worked on the basis of an actuality recording process. And in the 90s, I found myself doing workshop work. I think we were rolled over by Thatcherism, actually, Gillian. I don't think it was our fault that we were rolled over by Thatcherism. And I think we also had some very good structures. If you remember, we had the Association of Community Theatres. We had the Independent Theatre Council, which has now become an ordinary management organisation. And we had Equity. And those structures kind of got together. We unionised what was called fringe theatre in the late 60s, 70s and 80s, and brought people into membership with contracts. And a lot of support was given to the companies. The companies gave each other a lot of support. And I think one of the lessons is that we do need to be together, whether it's as women practitioners or whether it's as theatre practitioners in a particular area of theatre with particular interests in terms of scale and audience. I wouldn't begin to argue about that now, but I really do think that being together is crucial. This is a time when we have actually been quite deliberately smashed up. I mean, I was mixed up in all the major struggles in the 80s, and the movements here were deliberately smashed, and Blair is quite happy that there is no big organised resistance now that can be coherent. So I think we're all part of that. But I do think that we can be together, and I think there's lots of experience of structure for us to pool and use again. That's the first thing I wanted to say. And I think there's also a real problem in terms of the way funding is now given. It represents a cultural and political prejudice in favour of centres of excellence and crown jewels in the arts. And we've been arguing about that since the 70s with the Arts Council, about the way money is distributed, but the cultural pressure from that is gigantic. And still, if you read the critics, the number of tiny theatre companies that they review are pretty well zilch, and the notion that theatre is grease paint, and Jenny, with respect to the National Theatre and the reps, is still incredibly dominant. I mean, the argument, for example, about Beshti that took place at Birmingham took place as if in a kind of vacuum. There is so much experience of dealing with those issues within our fields of work that work in community and with people, and yet it never seemed for a moment to be an issue that those experts should be consulted and that they should advise or be doing that work as independent companies. So I'm not just complaining about this. I think there's loads of energy. I think there are loads of young people. I'm chair of the Small Scale Theatre Committee in Equity, and I meet lots and lots of young practitioners who are women who have got tremendous energy, but we do need to find a form and a structure within which that can actually tell. And I mean, I'd love to take part in this, and I know that Equity in its much more progressive form would be incredibly supportive of this. And I think that even the Independent Theatre Council will be too. So there are a few things sticking up out of the water which we could start to work with.
Thank you, Frances. One more comment, but I mean, I'd like to kind of then sort of draw it to a close because time's getting on. But I mean, I think this evening has got kind of one sort of Janus evening, is that there's a looking towards the past, and obviously I have a particular concern as a sort of curator of documenting what's gone before and making sure that we don't forget that, and that material is preserved and those memories are recorded, but also how we take that energy into the future. So we're sort of also talking about what kind of structures, what comes next, where do we take this debate next, do we have a larger conference to, you know, kind of sort of set up a revived conference of women theatre directors and administrators or the equivalent for the new century.